Hey, Mike.
Hello, Steph. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good.
So this is Let's Make Mistakes.
And this is Mike.
And this is Steph. We don't have Liam today.
Liam got deported.
Oh, figured.
It's only a matter of time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we have a special guest in the studio.
What now?
What? We have a special guest.
Who?
Sarah Jong.
Sarah Jong?
Yeah.
What does she do?
Sarah Jong's a writer.
Okay.
And you've written with a lot of different blogs. You're with Wired now, right?
I'm with Vice.
With Vice. But you were... I'm fucking this up. This is so early and I'm fucking it up.
Research here.
I have written for Wired. Okay. I've written for The Atlantic, The Verge, and right now I'm with Vice Motherboard.
Awesome.
Why'd you go to Vice?
Motherboard's great. They specialize in tech. And it was like, I really like the people there. So it's a good place.
I do some traveling, and what I started hearing this year was like I would meet people and they would talk to me about shit that was going on here, and the sources that they most often quoted were BuzzFeed and Vice.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of it's a huge outlet. I work with just the tech vertical, but yeah, Vice does a lot of really cool stuff.
Well, I remember when Vice was like where you went for like pictures of people like throwing up on Valencia Street.
Right. And now it's like Vice News actually did the FOIA on Hillary Clinton's emails.
Right.
And does like a lot of really great reporting on the Islamic State. Motherboard breaks stories about like the dark web and hacks all the time.
So how did Vice go from do's and don'ts to breaking stories on Hillary Clinton's mail server?
I have literally no idea, but I imagine there was just a point at which they're like, hey, there are all these good people who do good work and we should hire them. And then they did, and then they ended up doing good work.
It's like, hey, there's lots of journalists out here without jobs.
Maybe, or they poached them from other outlets. I have no idea what the internal thinking was.
I don't think you have to poach journalists these days.
Not these days, but no. I mean, this has been building up for a while. Like, you don't get a bunch of good people all at once. It's been, you know, it's been years.
Well, cool. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
What do you want to talk about? Just want to talk about stuff.
Yeah. Let's just talk about
let's
stuff.
Talk about stuff.
I like stuff.
No, it's not Steph. Stuff.
Oh.
Steph. Stuff.
Yes.
Steph.
What? Huh?
What are you mad about today?
I'm mad about a lot of things.
I know. That's why I always go to you.
Which one? Uber mad or sandwich mad?
Let's start with Uber mad. Why are you Uber mad today?
So I was just getting home from the airport last night, and I'm like on the 101 off ramp in my Uber, and boom, someone hits the back of them.
You got rear-ended.
Got rear-ended. Driver wasn't at fault.
You were in an Uber.
Yep.
Driver was doing fine.
Yep.
And the Uber that you were in got rear-ended.
Yep. And the driver's reaction was, "What do I do?" So I'm like, it's okay. Just pull over and like exchange that person's info. And he's like, where do I pull over? And I'm like, there's a Chevron right there. Just pull into the Chevron station.
Wait a minute. I'm confused.
Okay, sorry.
I'm confused. I thought you were the passenger in this car.
I was the passenger, yeah.
Wait. So the driver of this car, and this is, were you paying money for this ride?
Yes, I was.
Okay, so let's call it a professional driver since he's getting paid.
Yes.
So the professional driver didn't know what to do when he got rear-ended?
Yes.
Now, I'm sure that Uber trains people for that, don't they?
Yeah, I would. Yes, I think Uber would train people. I also think that as a driver, that's just a thing you know, right? Like what to do in those circumstances?
That's a thing I know.
So I get him to pull over the Chevron station, and the person who hit us follows us, like doing the right thing. The driver gets out and goes to the person.
So you told him to pull over?
I told him to pull over. He said, where? And I said, go to the Chevron station.
You told the Uber driver to do these things.
Yes, I did.
Because the Uber driver didn't know to do these things.
Correct.
I just want to be like super clear
totally
on this.
So we get
also, I just watched OJ Made in America.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's so good.
I think I need a few more years still because that was like my reality growing up in SoCal. Everything was about the OJ trial.
Hey, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done any stories on Uber?
Yeah, I covered their class action employment lawsuit.
This is totally out of left field. Like this doesn't happen over there, right?
Where? At Uber?
At Uber.
Like, at Uber.
This has to be an outlier.
I don't know. I mean, I've heard a lot of weird Uber stories.
Oh, like what?
Oh, you know. I mean, worse ones, like Uber drivers stalking passengers and things like that. I mean, I was in a car once and the car turned onto a one-way street.
Oh, shit.
But in the opposite direction.
That's bad.
My favorite Uber story, and this is comical compared to the stuff that I've heard about. We're in Palm Springs, and I asked the driver to take us to the airport. Palm Springs is not big.
No, it's like six hotels, right?
Right, and an airport. And I asked the driver to take us to the airport, and the driver takes us to the other side of the runway. Like there's a dinky little airplane museum or something. I'm like, this is not the airport. Like I see it across the runway.
Yeah.
But you need to take us to the airport. Well, this is where the GPS told me to go, which I totally believe because yeah. The GPSs are fucked in those things. But she like made a fuss. She didn't want to take me to the airport. She just wanted to take me to this place, which is where the GPS told her to go. I finally convinced her she needed to do the right thing. And then as she's pulling out of the museum, I said, well, you're going to turn the meter off, right? No. And at that point I said, all right, you know what? I'll deal with this at the Uber level.
Yeah. How did they react to that? Like, what did you get back when you dealt with them?
Well, you know, here's where I acknowledge that I'm a great big douchebag because I actually reached out to somebody high up at Uber.
Yeah.
And got it taken care of. But, you know, who can do that unless they're a great big white male douchebag?
So you didn't do the in-app bitching? You did like, I know someone.
I did the in-app bitching too.
Okay.
But then I texted my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she also got really freaked out and started driving erratically.
Got it.
That's where it turned dangerous.
Where she was like pissed at you for calling her out.
Yeah. And then she's driving around. I didn't even really call her out. I just like, I was.
Well, I mean, no, not calling out. Like she was right. And you were, no, like pointing out her mistake.
Yeah. Anyway, so what happened then?
So he gets out of the car after we pulled in the Chevron station and he goes up to the other driver and says, let's not make a fuss about this. It's cool. And gets back into my Uber. He doesn't take down any information, look at damage, anything like that. It's
really?
Just like, it's cool. It's cool. Let's not make a fuss.
So there's no accident report.
No accident report.
None.
And I'm kind of in shock because I was in the back seat. So I didn't have the sense to jump out with like my camera and be taking pictures of license plates and stuff.
Sure.
Like,
it's also not your job.
Also not my job. But like, you know, the driver me would be like on it, like camera in hand, ready.
Right. And you got a professional driver here.
Yeah. So then,
so look, I want to be real clear on this. So a professional driver working for Uber as a contractor, of course.
Yes. Yeah. Not an employee.
Let it be known that I'm making the jerking off motion.
Yes.
he suggested not taking down any information and not making a big deal of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was parked kind of near the airport and he was taking me to my own car. So as we start to get close to it, he starts doing the, oh, I'm going to give you 5 stars. You're a great passenger. So I'm giving you 5 stars. I'm going to give you 5 stars for being a great passenger. And he mentions it like over and over and over again.
Like, let's not make a big deal of this.
Like, yeah. Like, let's not make a fuss. It's cool. We cool. Yeah.
Well, hey, Sarah, what's the worst Uber story you got that you wrote about?
I tend not to write about Uber drivers themselves. I've only written about the lawsuit, really.
Can you explain the lawsuit?
Yeah, so there was a big class action. It's still actually not settled out, but there was a class action against Uber over, like, they had wrongly classified their drivers as contractors rather than employees.
Uh-huh.
And there's this whole thing with stealing tips and all the stuff.
So hold on a second, because I think some people are going to argue about this. Not me, but.
Oh, I actually think that like it's really contentious. Like, as far as the law is concerned, it's really not clear whether they're contractors or employees.
So what do you think?
I don't know. I think that maybe the problem is that contractors don't have enough rights. I think that Uber drivers are actually probably closer to contractors than employees.
What's the difference?
So employees get, you know, benefits. They would have to have their expenses reimbursed and all this stuff. But on the other hand, you know, employees are also subject to a great deal more control from their employers. So right now, Uber drivers, they are subject to a great deal of control from Uber. Like they have to follow like the GPS on their app and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like otherwise they could get terminated. They can get terminated for all kinds of reasons. But at the same time, like they don't get their expenses reimbursed, and wear and tear on cars can like be huge. Like it
yeah.
can completely eat away all the money that you make. They're getting like right now they're having their tips. Uber is dipping into like the gratuity.
Seriously?
Is that legal? That aspect?
Well, that's part of the lawsuit, right?
Okay.
Like, yeah. So yeah, exactly. But on the other hand, if you're an Uber driver, you don't have set hours, right?
That's true.
Like if you were an employee, you would have set hours. You would be subject to all kind, like, oh, you have to drive this many hours. And there's a fair number of drivers, like there's a lot of drivers who are pissed, right? They're like,
yeah.
like Uber's taking our tips. Uber owes us gas money. Uber is like making us carry little bottles of water in the car, right? And they don't even reimburse them for the little bottles.
Seriously?
Of water. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no like per diem of like, here's your gum Mm-mm. and water.
No, like that's just, yeah. There's this whole thing. But at the same time, there's like plenty of other drivers who are like, you know what? I'm happy with this arrangement because like this is a part-time job that I can pick up whenever and stop whenever. There's
yeah.
like a really big range of experiences. And I like don't want to diminish the fact that like there are a lot of people who feel very deceived. Like they're like, Uber told me I was going to make like $80,000 a year.
Yeah.
And I am, but I'm also spending like $50,000 a year on maintenance, like stuff like that, right? Like it's, there's a lot of nightmare stories
yeah.
as well as, you know, stories that make it sound not that bad. So I think that the issue here really is that the system is not kind to contractors. We don't have universal healthcare in this country. We don't have really an economy that's set up to provide for contractors. And that feels unjust. But at the same time, what the law says, I think it's really contentious as to whether the drivers are employees or contractors.
Do you see that a lot of these like sharing services, I don't even know how to describe it, because I'm thinking like Caviar and all
of those types of things. Economy, the sharing economy, yeah.
Do you think that it's going to have an impact on the law for contractors? Like, is there going to reach this spillover point where we need to reevaluate what a contractor is?
I don't know. I mean, everyone thought that this Uber lawsuit was going to be the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that there are so many hurdles to having like even bringing a lawsuit. Like Uber, the Uber lawsuit got lucky. You know what an arbitration clause is, right?
No.
So in a contract, and this is the case with a lot of terms of service with apps, and Uber is really big on saying that they're a neutral platform, that they're an app, they're like a software manufacturer and not a driving company, right?
Wow.
Yeah. So they're like, oh, these.
Oh, yeah. That's their big thing.
Yeah. That's their big. It's like, it's really weird, right? Like
that's douchey.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I feel bad saying that because I know the lawyers on both sides. but the thing is, like, they had these arbitration clauses in their contracts with the drivers. And
yeah.
arbitration means that you waive your right to file a lawsuit. It means
Got it.
That any complaint you have has to go to arbitration to, like, a neutral arbitrator. There's a whole system for setting up neutral arbitrators, but it like it caps damages. It makes it so that you can't have a class action lawsuit. Basically,
so
it reroutes all of your legal rights into this arbitration system.
So how did the Uber lawsuit come to be then with those clauses?
Because those clauses got thrown out.
Oh,
by who?
The judge. So it got brought before the judge, and there were plaintiffs who had opted out of the arbitration clauses in some cases. Right, so they were still there. But in order to have the big class action, there were multiple contracts for like it had changed year by year. Right. So I believe 1 year had its arbitration clauses thrown out by the judge. He said that it was unconscionable and it couldn't be upheld in court. Then another year got thrown out. And so there was a giant class of drivers that opened up. And then suddenly this class action was viable. And then the class got certified. There was a big fight to certify the class. And once that happened, this case really had legs. Oh, and this was years in. There was like a lot of effort put in. Like no one really thought that this was going to actually happen. And it happened. So yeah, they got past a significant hurdle and everyone thought that this was going to be the case that made, you know, sharing economy law. I think that it's, you know, going to go to settlement. I don't think that this is going to go forward. There was a settlement that that Uber and the other side reached $100 million. And it's a good, that's a
across how many drivers?
Many drivers. Sorry, it wasn't 100 million. It was like 500 million. Oh, my bad. Yeah. No, it was a lot of money. But like right now, it's like sort of in limbo because there were a lot of sort of follow-on lawsuits. And they're saying that the settlement settles out their claims and that's not fair. But you have to understand that the follow-on lawsuits came after they cleared these significant hurdles, like the arbitration clauses.
Yeah.
So there's this whole like lawyer fight over the settlement right now. But yeah, if it settles out, it means that the law doesn't get redefined. Like right. The big part about the settlement is that the contractors stay contractors.
Yeah, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
So Uber's basically paying to not change the law.
Yes. But they're also, they have to consent to this workers' association. They are paying out a huge sum of money. They are, what else are they doing? Kind of a weird thing about the tips thing is that they're not going to back off of taking their slice of the tips. What they're going to do is they're going to let the drivers put up tips appreciated signs in their cars. That's a really weird way of resolving that problem.
What?
Yeah.
Like a cup?
Or a sign in the window. Yeah, that's really weird.
It is really weird.
And then you can give them tips.
Well, I can give them a tip now.
I know. But it's like the whole problem was that I think part of the sort of theory in the lawsuit was that it was deceptive for them to mention gratuity in the app and then to skim off the gratuity. So now they get to get rid of that deception by putting the tips sign in the window.
I don't see how that clears up the deception.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? It is like there's a lot of strange things. But you have to understand the settlement is actually like really big. And if the lawsuit had continued, there was like a strong possibility that like one of the arbitration decisions would get overturned by the appeals court and then the lawsuit would be dead. Oh. Of course, there was also a possibility that workers would be reclassified as independent contractors and then Uber would be really screwed. Like this was high stakes, but it could have gone either way.
Right.
And so what the settlement does is it gives drivers something. I don't know.
It gives those drivers something.
Which drivers?
The drivers who are involved in the class action lawsuit.
All class actions mean all drivers unless you opt out.
I know.
Oh, wow.
But but let's be clear here. This was an opportunity to change the definition of what a contractor means in United States law.
Well, I think that at the district court level, it's going to be like specific to Uber, right? So there's a settlement, or rather, there is a still pending lawsuit around Lyft, and the facts are really different. And in fact, the settlement they reached is much smaller than the Uber case. And because the facts are different, the way that they control their workers is different. The determination as to whether they're contractors or employees is going to be very fact specific as to like how they treat their workers. And so I don't think that this would have changed the law. I think what it would have done is it would have made the law really uncertain. It would have like really stirred the waters. But once it gets to an appeals court, no one knows what happens. Maybe they set a precedent. Maybe in California, the law is different. And then because this is California law too. That's the other thing.
Right.
Yeah. It's not just this country. There's like, it would be a state by state thing. And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how things would have turned out. But yeah, the Uber case was sort of the big thing. And I think that the lessons from the Uber case actually mean that a lot of these companies are going to change up their practices to avoid looking like Uber, but they're going to do sort of the same thing where they are relying on gig economy workers without giving them benefits. And, you know, maybe the lesson here isn't so much that gig economy workers have to be reclassified as it is, maybe the law needs to be changed so that contractors are entitled to benefits in one way or another.
Yeah, this is all moot in a couple of years anyway.
Because they get replaced with robots?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because Uber drivers are just a temporary inconvenience as far as Uber's concerned.
Yeah, I think this is all moot. I absolutely think this is all moot.
So how does Uber continue to classify itself as a neutral platform, software-only company once they're, not once, because they're doing it now. They're actively doing research on self-driving cars.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh yeah, we expanded into hardware. Like it's, right? Like it's, this whole thing is like tech washing, right?
Tech washing?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I love that term.
Yeah, no, I just came up with it.
That's awesome.
No, it makes me think of Mark Zuckerberg giving me a sponge bath.
I mean, maybe you should think of it that way.
I don't want that.
Kind of is.
Yeah, but I don't want this future either.
Well, so that's like another thing though, is like, I feel really, really bad for the drivers because I know a lot of what they're going through and how Uber is like siphoning off their money and how little they make on every ride, that most of that money is going to Uber. So like when I actually wrote the complaint about like exactly what had happened, I still gave them 3 stars. Like,
yeah, no, because I didn't want to get terminated at 4.8. Yeah.
And I just felt so bad. I was like, yeah, but you like should have known what to do. And I was like sitting there at my car, like rationalizing, like, what is the best way to do it? Because I don't want to trash this dude. He wasn't at fault. He panicked.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, you don't, that sucks. And you don't really necessarily want him driving for other people. And
yeah, you can't panic like that when you're like, you're getting paid to drive other people around.
I just wanted, it's like this weird thing where you're like, what do I want out of this? Like, situation is what I want is better training for the drivers. I don't want this particular driver getting canned, right?
Well, like, if it makes you feel better, there's like, if the settlement goes through, there's going to be like a union-like worker association that will advocate for drivers' rights. So things are going to get better for drivers if the settlement does go through.
That makes me feel bad. I think he was at a 4.8, like the text they send
you. Yeah, no, it's like, it's really, it's kind of like you even with like the worst rides I've had, I've been like, oh man, I know that this person has like sort of no support in front of the company, right?
Yeah.
And it would make me feel better if there was a union or something like a union. I wish it were like a real union, but like, you know, labor laws.
Yeah. Oh. Yep. So I got, it's been like 20 hours since this happened and I contacted Uber. So I didn't know what to do at first. So I did the rate the driver thing and there's that little like form field where you write down the description of what happened and why you're giving that particular rating.
Yeah.
Didn't hear anything back. And then one of my coworkers was like, hey, there is a special place to report when an accident happens. But it's like 4 layers deep into the UI. Like he was like popping through all my options until he found the right one.
Do you know if Uber gives you money for being in an accident?
They did not. When they finally got back to me.
Lyft does.
So the last time I got in an Uber accident, I got like a $5 credit. My driver ran over a pedestrian in the crosswalk and the guy, in front of my house
too. I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that.
You should. Well, I'm in the Irish neighborhood, so the guy started punching the hood, so.
That's fair. I would punch the
hood
too.
Totally fair.
So wait a minute. What the part I was laughing at was, and they gave you a $5 credit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's so strange.
What was the $5 credit for?
They're like, sorry for the inconvenience that we mowed over a pedestrian. Have $5 off your next ride.
Oh my God.
Oh, and it wasn't even a credit. It was like an off your next ride type of thing. $5 coupon. I finally got like my form canned response back from Uber like an hour ago. And it was like, so sorry for the inconvenience. We value your feedback. And we'll take this up to the correct people on the team.
That's a really long way to say fuck you.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't even give me the $5 coupon. It was the ultimate fuck you. So.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
So, you know.
I'm Twitter escalating it, which is like, I hate to do that, but I knew nothing else was going
to
happen.
It's the only thing people listen to.
It's true. Like, I tried to go through the appropriate means and nothing's going to come out of it.
You should get Mike to hook you up to his buddy.
Oh, yeah.
He's gone.
Oh. Used our Uber favor.
I think that is the appropriate means these days.
I feel bad about it, though.
Why?
Because I don't want to, like, I don't know.
Steffi shouldn't be on the street.
Oh my God.
He should not be driving other people around.
That's true.
He does not know what to do when he gets rear-ended. That's the sort of thing that would have kept you from getting your driver's license.
Okay, that's true.
That's on the driver's test.
Yeah. says, you have to say like pull over to a safe location.
So he does not have the necessary information to be a driver.
So what I feel bad about is I don't like to complain on Twitter because I don't want to be a whiny Twitter person. Like, I just hate that it's a platform for bitching about things, you know?
Well, and yet it is.
I mean, we had Steven on here and it was like awesome when he talked about like the good that comes from Twitter. But at the same time, I don't want to be that person where my entire Twitter is like, fuck you, Uber.
Hey, so here's a question.
Okay.
So Uber at its core, mm-hmm. right? It's not villainous. It's not, it's just take it like as the basic concept, right? Okay. You got people who have cars.
Yeah.
And can make money by driving other people around. And you've got people who need rides and can get one of these people to drive them around, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got a company that matches these two people together in a way that makes the whole thing very simple. Nothing about that is like unethical, right?
Think it's a, yeah, no, I agree with you.
Okay, so.
At its core, it's great.
At its core, this seems like, hey, this is a really good idea. So how does, and feel free to jump in, Sarah, how does something that starts off like a good idea, ethically sound, turn into the flaming moral cesspool that is Uber right
now? I mean, it's like, you know, I think it goes to sort of how flimsy our notion of consent is, right? Like we have two consenting adults making a commercial transaction, right?
Sure.
But why are Uber drivers Uber drivers? I mean, some of them are working for like limo companies that are contracted with Uber Black or whatever, right?
Right.
But let's put them aside. Let's say the drivers we're talking about are the ones who are strapped for cash and they can't get a steady job, and that's why they're driving for Uber. Would Uber feel as bad if we were not coming out of a recession, if we weren't living in this area, the Bay Area, an area that is going through kind of an extraordinary economic crisis in which there is huge income inequality and an underclass of people who are extremely precarious, and they're sort of living on a knife's edge? Like, would Uber be really all that bad if it weren't happening against that background? Like, people, because of the economic situation they're in, are they really consenting to working for Uber? Or is this sort of, are they almost being coerced by their circumstances to work for, you know, a quasi-employer that can kind of treat them as disposable because there's so many of them? And I think things would be different if we were living in a different economic era, if we had a different social structure, particularly for people who aren't regularly employed. But as it is, we're not. We're not living in a better time.
And what jumps out to me is I think that like Uber would be a great opportunity to kind of divide that wage gap. Like all the people who aren't involved in tech could be taking money from tech people who want who want rides. But it's not like that. It's like screwing the poor to keep the rich rich. Like it could be a really, really empowering thing if they weren't skimming tips and giving such a low percentage.
Mm-hmm.
And they would still be pretty rich, like if they weren't doing that.
So who's
would they be meeting their valuation? I mean, that's true. Are they really making?
Who's the villain here?
Capitalism? I don't know.
Thanks.
The Republican Party. People who settled for the Affordable Care Act instead of public option.
Oh God! Hey, all right, cool.
Wow. So we're all sufficiently depressed now.
No, I can take it further.
Oh, you're gonna take it further? Okay.
Let's talk about guns.
Want to talk about guns?
I love talking about guns.
What about guns, Mike?
Talk about guns and Facebook.
Okay. Tell me more.
It's my new favorite thing. So last January, Facebook made a great big bold statement that they were not going to allow individuals to buy, sell, or trade guns on their site anymore.
Okay.
It's a big deal.
And now I'm scared that that was going on before, but.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know God. What? You know what? You want to be really scared?
Oh, no.
Be really scared?
What's up?
It's still going on now. You know, because you know what Facebook has actually done about that?
Probably jack shit.
Yeah, jack shit.
Like coming off the Gamergate, I can't imagine anyone does anything.
So they've done absolutely nothing to implement this policy or to try to follow this policy. In fact, right after they made that policy, one of their heads of engineering, one of their engineering directors, Greg Rossi, I believe his name is, made a very public statement to Forbes that he was going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that this never happened, and that any page that got taken down was going to get put right back up.
Facebook allowed that in their ranks,
which is amazing.
They were
right?
Like, "Oh, okay, go public about that."
Right?
Fuck.
You know anything about this, Sarah?
No, I haven't been following this at all.
So Greg is. He's a big gun enthusiast, by the way. And he likes teaching Facebook employees how to shoot.
Awesome.
Yeah. So he's been doing everything he can to make sure that this thing never actually gets implemented correctly, which is fine because there was never really any intention to implement any of it correctly. So after the Orlando shooting, when a friend of mine was like, "Hey, did you know about this Facebook thing?" And honestly, I didn't because I don't spend any time on Facebook. And he's like, you know, you can report, you can find, these groups are all over the place and you can just report them. Like anybody can form a group and just start, you know, doing whatever. And lots of those groups are selling guns. Like a licensed gun dealer can sell guns on there as long as they point to an outside site, like Arms List, which is like the Craigslist of gun selling, because Craigslist does not allow any gun sales whatsoever.
Got it.
So we've been flagging these groups and these photos and pages and individual sales and all of that. And we've learned a lot. I think so far we have gotten close to 2,000 taken down.
Wait, say that. How many?
2,000.
That's incredible. It's also scary that there were that many.
Oh, Steph, you have no idea.
I know. I haven't been on Facebook in like
Steph,
3 years.
Steph, there's so many. There's so many. And about half of them go right back up the next day. So among the fun, amazing things that we found is, and I was tweeting some of these things out today, someone found a blanket for sale on Facebook. Someone was selling a blanket.
Okay.
It was $700. And sitting on top of that blanket was an AR-15.
Okay, so is this kind of like when you buy sea turtles in California?
Yeah.
Where you buy an aquarium and, oh my God, there happen to be sea turtles in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can buy soda cans.
Okay.
For $1,000 on Facebook. And, you know, there might be, you know, an AK-47 in the photo with the soda can. So they're going around it that way.
And Facebook's okay with that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
You know what? I'm of the opinion that if it's on your site, you're okay with it. If you make a great big statement and oh my God, they used it as such a PR stunt and then they implemented nothing. It's okay to discuss guns. So there's lots of posts about, you know, here's a photo of a giant rifle of some sort. I don't know the difference between these idiotic things. And call me if you want to discuss this, where discuss is in quotes. And that's okay.
So subtle.
Yep. And so then when you go to flag one, this is also interesting. When you go to flag one, there's like a little dance that you have to do with the flagging mechanism. It actually takes about 4 screens until you get to the word gun. And like, so the first option, and there's also like 4 different patterns that I've seen so far.
Okay.
That come up randomly. The one that I see most often is you get all the options, like specific thing number one, specific thing number two, and then very vague, "I don't think this should be on Facebook."
Okay, that's
the one
subjective.
You click on. That's the one you have to click on. Under that, it's like, This contains a photo of me that I'm not okay with. This is defamatory towards a group. This contains, this is like child porn, something else.
Okay.
You got to click on something else. Once you click on something else, then you see a bunch of options, one of which is this describes the sale of gun, drugs, or adult material. It's a really weird thing to combine, but whatever. You hit that one, and then you can submit it for review.
Okay.
Once you submit it for review, most of them come back as, these are actually okay. We suggest you just block them or get familiar with our feedback guidelines or our community standards, I should say. And then there's a little form. Are you satisfied with what happened? And there's a frowny face to the left, a happy mm-hmm. face to the right, and a couple of gradations in between. You click the frowny face.
Yeah.
And there, you get a little form element and you say, no, this really is a fucking gun sale, you morons. And then you resubmit that. About 50% of those actually get taken down.
Okay.
Once you've resubmitted.
That's crazy.
In the last couple of weeks since we started doing this, first I got a 24-hour ban.
Okay. Because you reported too many?
They wouldn't tell me why.
Okay.
They just said, because I posted some of the images that I was reporting mm-hmm. on my thread, whatever the hell it's called. And I logged in once and it's like, hey, we removed this thing that you posted because it doesn't follow our guidelines. And the thing that they removed was a picture of a gun for sale that I found next to an image of them telling me it was okay to be selling that gun.
Wait, back up a sec. So you posted a pic?
I posted two images side by side.
Yeah.
One was the gun I found for sale.
Yeah.
A screenshot of the gun I found for sale next to a screenshot of Facebook's response that it was okay to have that gun there.
So
I posted those to
you.
My feed and that violated the community guidelines.
Does that mean someone flagged you?
I'm sure they did.
No.
Which means that we got somebody's attention.
Yeah.
So then they flagged me for 24 hours. I went back after 20. I could still report gun sales
mm-hmm.
within those 24 hours. So as soon as those 24 hours were up, I went ahead and did the same thing. Got a 3-day ban for that. Once
my
3-day ban.
Explain what the ban was
they,
for.
No, and I keep asking. And once the 3-day ban was up, guess what I'm up to now? 7-day ban.
Oh, damn.
7-day ban.
That's crazy.
Which I don't care because I can still report groups.
You just can't post.
I can't post.
Okay.
I can't reply to things other people put on there, and that's fine. There's other ways to talk to people, but I can still report groups.
Okay, that's all
anyway,
that matters.
But I think what they're heading towards is just banning me from the service outright. But we're up to like 2,000 groups.
That's amazing.
And we got written up in Mother Jones.
Nice.
In Gadget. Daily Dot. New York Daily News. And another one who I'm really sorry, I forget right now. But anyway, like 5.
So some listeners want to help ban some more groups. Like what kind of terms should they be looking for?
Gun for sale.
Okay. Most of them aren't more subtle than that. They're
no,
pretty in
because,
their face.
I mean, I'm sure there's really subtle ones, but if you search for gun for sale, you'll be busy for a while.
Oh my God. Okay.
Pew pew for sale also returns quite a lot.
Marvin the Martian is selling guns.
Yeah.
Oh.
You can do a search for AR-15 for sale and lose all hope in humanity.
Okay.
If you want. But as far as I'm concerned, Facebook is an arms dealer.
So I'm going to throw this back to Sarah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. How is the law adjusting to different platforms? Like there are very strict rules in California about how to sell a gun and things like that. But Facebook is,
yeah,
it's out
this
there.
Would be covered under CDA 230.
What's that?
It's a liability shield for this is content uploaded to servers at the direction of the user. So even if the user is liable, Facebook is not. I mean, I think that there's the really sketchy thing here is that Facebook said that they were going to not allow it anymore, and they're still allowing it, and that's
so the example that I mean, you are absolutely correct. They're covering themselves as a neutral platform. But let's take Craigslist, for example. Craig Newmark said no guns on Craigslist.
Yeah, the Silk Road didn't allow guns. The freaking Silk Road didn't allow gun sales.
So the Silk Road does not allow gun sales. And Facebook does.
yeah, exactly.
So when Craig said it's no nuts. Guns on Craigslist, he meant it. No guns on Craigslist.
And when the Silk Road said no guns on the Silk Road, they meant it.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
there had to be like spinoff sites that sold guns on the dark web.
Yeah, that's where Arms List came from. Arms List was a reaction to not being able to sell guns on Craigslist.
Yeah. And there was, I think, a thing called the Armory on the dark web that was a reaction to the Silk Road.
If you don't want guns sold on your platform, you can stop the sale of gun on your platforms. You can at least make people have to be really fucking creative to sell guns on there.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there's no point in putting out a whole press release about it if you're not going to do it.
Well, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
And immediately after they put that out, their own employees started undermining it. Not employees, employee. One person. There is one person, Greg Rossi, at Facebook, who is single-handedly making sure that this doesn't get implemented, which tells me that they really don't want to implement it.
That's really crazy to me that like Facebook would allow that kind of PR nightmare of like our engineering lead said what we just said doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
That's surprising.
That's a mess. That's really messy. It is kind of fun though that Facebook has lower morals than the Silk Road, right?
It's fun and scary as shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you see for, like, I'm sorry, I'm taking this back to the Uber place. What? What do you see for, like, the future of, like, the sharing economy? And
we're all going to be dead.
All of these people are going to be replaced with robots. But, I mean, it's like, they're already treating the people like robots. Like, the whole thing where you get penalized for deviating from your route and stuff. Like, yeah, like, they don't want people to use their own human judgment, even if they're better drivers than the app is. They just don't want people to be people. They want people to be robots because they're going to replace them with robots in the end. And at that point, we're going to be having a whole other depressing conversation about what that does to our economy and to sort of human dignity.
I just want so badly for there to be hope, like hope in the future.
Yeah, I mean, nope. It's... I do think that right now there are... I mean, it's not something that I'm super optimistic about, but I think that people are noticing that the trajectory we're heading towards is like, you know, mass unemployment and all of those things. And this is definitely a minority in Silicon Valley. And I don't know how this is going to turn out, but there are people who are really interested in things like universal basic income and those kinds of projects.
I think society is like an alcoholic. And right now it's really close to hitting bottom. And if you've ever dealt with an alcoholic, you know that you need to have them hit bottom. And only once they've actually hit their bottom can they actually start looking for help. We are very close to being able to get help for society. There's your hope.
Wow, that's like the darkest hope ever.
Right?
Oh. Wait, can you talk more about the universal basic income?
So universal basic income is... the idea that just everyone in this country gets a check just every month. It's like Social Security, but you're not paying into Social Security.
Okay.
Just everyone is just getting a baseline amount of money.
Like Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I mean, does Sweden do UBI?
No, I don't.
No. No country does UBI.
They'll do
right
it
now.
Before anybody else.
Yes. The Swiss actually had a referendum on it and they voted no. And so people are saying it hasn't quite reached its political moment yet. But I mean, a lot of it has to do with most people don't know what UBI is.
Yeah.
And the great thing about UBI is unlike welfare, it doesn't benefit just the poor, right? Like it's just, there isn't this huge administration behind it the way like, you know, policing people's activities or like making sure that you qualify and forcing drug tests on people and so on and so forth. Instead of having that, it's just, oh, we're just going to cut a check.
Yeah.
And it's just going to go out. And sort of the idea behind it is that we have this wealth. We have the ability to, you know, make food, make products. We are creating wealth with fewer people, like, you know, all the time, fewer and fewer and fewer people.
Yeah.
And that's the case with, you know, replacing people with AI, right? We're taking jobs away, but at the same time, things are getting done. So why do people need jobs to have roofs over their head and food to eat and stuff like that? So the idea is that universal basic income is almost necessary to sort of keep society running, or will cure economic ills. You know, this is the opposite of trickle down, right? You disperse all of this money and then the economy will start rolling forward again.
Yeah, people have like buying power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's all of these arguments for UBI. The arguments against UBI, of course, is like not economically practical. It's not actually going to make people happy, blah, blah, blah.
I'd be pretty happy getting a check.
Yeah.
Me too.
I think a lot of people would be. I think a lot of people would be really happy living under universal health care and all kinds of things as well. And the reason why I bring up UBI now is because Y Combinator is looking to do a pilot study on universal income in Oakland, where they pick a bunch of people and they basically give them universal income. Oh, not universal. It would just be basic income. It's not universal because it's like just the members of the study. And then they collect data on how that does.
Okay, so...
Yeah. You see some issues here already.
Oh my God. You can't... It's like missing a blimp. Not seeing the issues here.
Yeah.
So you've got a bunch of rich white fucks in Silicon Valley about to do some human testing in Oakland.
Yeah.
What the actual fuck?
And there's a whole bunch of other things where, for some reason, and I haven't gotten super clear answers on this, if they give this money to people, those people are going to lose benefits like Section 8 and healthcare and things like that. And it's so it's...
For a study, why would anyone give it up for...
Yeah, so they're looking into it now, but it's like, why didn't you look into it before you made your announcement? So it's it's all a bit strange. Yeah, but yeah, no, it's one of these weird things where basically sort of, you know, low-level soft socialism is turning into the next Silicon Valley moonshot.
Right? Hell no. Hell no.
Why do you say hell no?
Because libertarians are not going to come up with socialism. Mm. They're not going to redefine socialism.
But don't you like that the people with all the wealth are at least exploring other options at this point as opposed to hoarding it?
I certainly don't trust it one bit.
Okay.
Somehow this all turns into that Snowpiercer. There's no way that we don't all end up in the last car of that train.
You know, I always thought that, like, we are currently living the prologue to the prequel to Snow Crash right now. That's what I've always felt. Like,
that's
this is
scary.
Like, we're living in like such a hyper privatized geographic location right now. And this is where it begins. This is where the delivery boys on the hoverboards start popping up, and this is where the federal government becomes its own startup and all of those things.
Oh man, we're sad again still.
What are you doing?
This is just how I feel all the time. I feel just normal right now.
How come we never give Seven a mic?
I don't know. He never gives himself one.
Yeah, you're right. He should give it himself.
Seemed like an intentional choice.
I just thought maybe he'd be happy because we're not.
Are you happy? No.
Nobody's happy in this
Nobody's
room.
Happy.
At what point is it okay to start doing heroin?
If you don't have a child, I don't see why not.
Okay.
A straightforward rule.
Yeah, I think so.
I'd say we end there.
So Sarah, what are you working on right now?
Oh, okay.
How can people find you and follow you? We'll finish. You can say something depressing after this.
I will.
Okay.
All right. So I'm on Twitter at Sarah Jeong, SARAHJEONG. I write for Vice Motherboard regularly, and I should have a piece up about universal basic income in a few days.
Nice. And I heard you have a book out.
Yes. So I wrote a book about internet harassment, which we didn't quite talk about, but we like.
Why
sort of
aren't we talking about that?
It's called The Internet of Garbage, and you can get it for Kindle on Amazon or Google Play, or I believe the Apple Bookstore, all of those places.
Okay, nice.
Can you walk into a bookstore and get it?
No, you cannot. It's okay. A really tiny book is the thing. It's I wrote basically a book that's kind of about online harassment, but I don't spend that much time sort of discussing the basics of it. It's mostly about sort of reframing the discussion around how to solve it.
So how do you solve it?
The way that I wanted to discuss it is I wanted to make it clear that it's an extension of violence against women in the real world. And we haven't solved violence against women in the real world. You don't solve violence, you mitigate it. So I talked about mitigating online harassment, giving people better tools, building a smarter infrastructure, things like that.
That sounds great. I'm excited to read this. Why hasn't Twitter done anything about harassment?
I think it's really sort of the reasons why Twitter has a lot of other problems as a company. It's that they're motivated by short-term gains, right, because of shareholders. And I think that it's necessary for them to deal with online harassment in order to be a long-term viable product. But in the short term, it's not profitable.
So let me see if I can tie everything up here. How many of the problems that we've discussed today come from us being in a world where you have to think about shareholders and stock price?
Almost all of them. Yeah. It is sort of the root of evil, right?
I recently saw a talk by Douglas Rushkoff where he talked about that. And I'm going to horribly paraphrase him here, but our ultimate problem is that we are building everything that we're building on top of a broken operating system, which is capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That sounds right.
Done. All right. We have solved it. Let's go drink.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you.
Do you want to do like boiler room stuff with the podcast and, you know,
boiler room stuff?
Yeah, you know, where you
like Freddy Krueger?
No, Jesus. Where you talk about like, okay, here's what's coming up.
Oh, yeah. So Mule's been doing some new stuff I've been seeing on Twitter.
Have we?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wait, what are these goat salons I'm hearing about?
Oh, yeah, we've got, that's the other reason that Sarah's here today. She's going to be talking at a goat salon. This is only interesting if you're in town.
I think most of our listeners are in California.
We have three listeners, and I think I'm pretty sure at least one of them is in Asia.
I'm the other one, maybe two.
All right, two. So in our gallery space, we have goat salons like twice a month where people come into, they just talk about what they're doing, and like 30 people show up, they have drinks, and they ask questions, and there's like a conversation.
Okay. That sounds pretty exciting.
It's like halfway between chatting with somebody mm-hmm. and like a talk.
What type of topics might you cover? Like, is it just art stuff? Like, if I don't get art?
No. Okay. No. There's nothing to get with art. It's bourgeois bullshit. today we're going to talk about the Internet of Garbage.
Okay, awesome. I'm excited. Yeah. See, is there anything going on in the gallery? Like, what's up with that?
Right now, we've got a show by this young Texas kid, Boston Cleon.
Boston? Oh, okay.
No, we got Austin Cleon in the gallery right now. It's a good show.
Do you think he listens to this?
No.
Okay, no way.
No, unless we titled, and we will, unless we titled this episode is about Austin Cleon. Yeah.
Nice.
We also have Kelly Anderson coming later this year to the gallery.
Okay. When?
Oh, I don't know. Put me on the spot.
God,
like
just
that.
Like, give me a month. I was late summer.
October.
October?
That's going to be wrong.
Fall? Fallish?
We'll edit.
Here, okay.
Here, wait a minute. July, August, September, October, November, December. There you go, seven.
Awesome. Cool. So I think that wraps up most of the upcoming events, unless I'm Do you have some cool workshops? Anything?
I'm out of the loop here. Do some talks soon. I'm doing Generate.
Generate? Okay.
Generate. Down right here in San Francisco. It's my first talk in town.
Oh, this nice. Year. You've been everywhere else.
Everywhere but town.
Yeah.
You know that whole prophet in his own hometown bullshit. Yeah, I'm going to talk about guns and Facebook.
And then you're going to be out at Abstractions in Pittsburgh pretty soon.
That's right. I'm going to Pittsburgh.
Nice. I love Pittsburgh.
Hoping that is it during baseball season? I think it is. I think we're going to go see a baseball game.
Is that during August or September? Or when?
During baseball season.
Baseball season, yeah. It won't be too late in the year. Awesome. Right. Hey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sarah, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And for those of you out there, get Sarah's book. It's called The Internet of Garbage. You can get it in all of your ebook stores, in Kindle stores, in Amazon.
Apple, Google Play.
Google Play is what I was thinking of. Yeah. Don't go to bookstores. You won't find one anyway.
But do go to bookstores for other things.
What bookstores? There ain't no bookstores left, Steph.
Your local bookstore.
There aren't any left.
Everyone go to City Lights for a paper thing after you read Sarah's.
There's Booksmith, too. Booksmith is great.
Oh, yeah. I love Booksmith. Yeah. Oh. Have you ever been to Shipwrecked?
Oh, I've written for Shipwrecked.
I'm
writing for one of them in July.
Wait, is it going to be the
Harry Potter one?
Ah,
yes.
Okay, I really want to go to it, but it's at like 11 p.m. and I'm running a half marathon the next day and the start time is like 5 a.m.
Totally understandable.
You're not going.
No, I mean, I could just stay awake. I could go to Shipwreck and then I could continue to carb load and just eat cookies until the race. And
how many marathons have you done this year?
I'm halfway through. I'm at 3 half marathons.
You're wasting away.
I know.
No, wasting away.
My legs are, but that's about it.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Which other ones have you written for? I'm like fangirling.
I wrote for the Great Expectations one.
Okay. I was there. I saw you talk.
All right. Yeah. No, it was, I think the Harry Potter one is going to be a lot better because
so excited.
I know the material really well. Hey. So I'm really excited to do this one.
Hey, for those people out there who aren't as cool as you two.
That's a lot of people.
I know. What the fuck is Shipwrecked?
Okay. Shipwreck is, it's at one of our local bookstores where they choose like a classic literary piece and they have 6 different authors write erotic fanfic about one of the characters.
Oh.
And they have this amazing guy, Brock.
Yeah, I think so.
He's amazing. He just gets up there in his big leather chair and he reads all of them aloud and then you vote on your favorites.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
It's really awesome. And it's like once a month, I think. Or
mm-hmm. About once a month.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, you know what? So I just checked Twitter.
Yeah.
This is a problem.
Okay.
So somebody is talking about let's make mistakes.
Uh-huh.
And they're saying that it's defunct now.
What does that mean?
That means it's no longer being made.
Oh, no. Well, it is. So I just feel like they're
making
being mean.
One right now.
Yeah.
We're making one right now.
Should I go like, what should we do?
We should market this better.
I am out there. I am tweeting. I'm using emoji so the kids will listen to our podcast.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids love emoji.
Podcast saying bae.
Use that eggplant one.
Okay.
Kids like that one.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you both very much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Seven.
Seven. Thank you, Seven.
Okay. Bye. We'll